This podcast was recorded in August 2016, when Jo was spending her time writing about how to record well.
Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you to learn, think, and act with integrity so that people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. Hello, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jo. Oh, we're meant to start to talk now about what we've just done, haven't
spontaneously,
we?
Spontaneously, yeah.
Yeah, spontaneously, that was it.
We've just been talking about workload and targets, and we did have a script for that, although we went off-piste as usual. But we were left with quite a lot more that we'd probably want to say about recording, so that's what we're going to talk about now.
Yeah, I think it's particularly interesting for me at the moment because I'm writing a book on recording, and I know that you have done one in the past for us for adults, and I'm now kind of trying to update it, and it's always a really tricky topic to be helpful on, and I really think being helpful and trying to get social workers to think about what they're writing and why is a good thing to aim for when you're teaching a recording thing. And so one of the little tools that I've been making, and I hope it works, is one where I get the workers to start to think about all the documents that they produce. So all the documents they write, and I get them to list them, and then I say, okay, who is that document important to?
Okay.
Is it important to you? Is it important to the organisation? Is it important to the child, family or adult? Is it important to another organisation? Or it could be more than, you know, it could be important to everyone. But I get them to think about their stakeholders, think about the document, and then rank it in terms of who is it most important to. Then I ask them to think about, well, how much impact, how much difference does it make to the child, the family or the adult? Is it actually contributing to the interventions that will make a difference and be helpful to their lives? And if the answer is yes, then it seems to me and that document is the one where you should be spending most of your time and energy. They're the documents that will be the vehicles that drive your service, your intervention along. And so therefore, they're the ones that should be the most helpful, the ones you spend the most time on. And the ones that are either only helpful to you or only helpful to the organisation or are minimally helpful to children and families, perhaps they could be the ones that you still, of course, do, but spend much less time on.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it goes back to this idea of purpose, you know, why are we recording things, and the danger in writing about recording or training people on recording or talking about recording is that you end up just adding, oh, and it would be nice to do this, and it would be nice to do this, and oh, don't forget you've got to spell everything correctly and write in plain English, and by the time you finish, people are cross-eyed with the amount of stuff that they have to think about. Whereas taking it back to the simple question of why are we writing it is really helpful. And there was some research I read about social workers talking about why they recorded things, and when they talked through quite fluidly about it, the themes that came out were recording for accountability and for process and for empowerment. And the accountability side, you can see there's a benefit there for people who use services. Absolutely, they need to see who's making decisions and why and where the judgment's coming in. Process also, you can see that that's quite important to people, that they can see that you've followed a reasonable path in what you've been doing. The empowerment one, though, that's the most crucial, I think, and that's what you were just talking about, something that's meaningful and that advances someone's path. You know, that's about using recording as a way of enhancing well-being or the welfare of children, and that's the bit that actually doesn't get talked about much in policies. It's more about showing what we've done and showing why we've done it, rather than using it as a way of making people's lives better in its own right. So not just writing what we've done, but using writing as something that we do, if that makes sense.
Yes, it really does, Jerry. And I think that that comes to the heart of good recording, because if you've ever watched a child who's been in care come back and look at their files, the things that they look for in their files aren't about how many meetings you had or how many tasks you carried out. They really want to know that the workers saw them, saw them as a person and noticed things about them. They have genuine curiosity about what they were like as children. They have genuine curiosity about what their home was like, what their parents were like. How did their mum and dad take the fact that they were going into care? And sometimes those stories that are really all about identity, a child's identity, get really lost in the went to court, got order about such and such, now need to do X, had meeting about. And it's not that it means to, but it misses the essential relationship of what we do.
Yeah, so ideally when you're writing something, it should enable someone to have a better understanding of their situation, but also to have more options and control in their life. And I think, yeah, a lot of our documents are quite impenetrable for those purposes. And it's interesting the things that social workers complain about and certainly adults and carers complain about or raised as an issue in the consultation on the Care Act were very similar. The people don't like duplication, they don't like repetition, they don't like having to put lots of negative things and repeat negative things, they don't like things that aren't really clear that it's about them, that when you read it you don't know it could be anyone. So those things are actually disheartening to everybody, and I think that's quite hopeful maybe for social workers to know that if they don't like lots and lots of recording that doesn't seem to serve a purpose, actually service users don't like it either.
Because it's about the idea that all recording actually is discriminatory. You know, you take a person, you capture them in one moment in a very flattened dimension of their life, and you make that moment last forever. And what we often don't do is we don't paint people in their complexity. We sum them up with either their difficulties or their disease or their syndrome or their disasters. And we don't spend enough time putting them in context. And I think that part of recording is about making sure that you're always contextualizing. And that can sometimes be as simple as a date, a proper, this is the situation that this person's living in at the moment, and this is how the person says they feel. It doesn't have to be a huge amount of more writing, but it's about when you contextualize what you're doing, the purpose of the record, when the record was made, how the people you made the record were feeling about it. It's much more helpful because it gives a background, I think, to what we're doing and can move away some of those discriminatory elements.
Yeah, absolutely. So trying to make things more person-centered. And there are some documents that are useful for this. And one of the things I'm always, again, quite wary about is if you start suggesting that there's tools or recording things that will help, people say, well, we've already got 25 that we have to use. Yeah. I would quite like to throw away some of them. And actually, I did work in an organisation once that said if they introduced any other form, you had to get rid of two.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and try and combine things and try and pull things through and have things copied. But the useful documents, certainly for adults, are some of the person-centred tools. So we have one that's often used. It can be used for young people and children as well. I think it came out of adults, and that's the one-page profile, which covers the things that people like and respect about me, the things that are important to me, and the things that you can do to support me, and captures it all in one place, so that actually if you were going to meet that person or you went round to a care home and this was on their door, or you opened a file, that would be the thing that you'd have immediately, and it would give you the really key information and give you an idea of that person. You know, it's quite holistically for a very short document.
I think you're right, there's lots of tools around. It's about the mindset that we have when we record. For me, any tool can be really great, like the National Assessment Framework and the assessment tool that we use in children's services can be really fabulous. It can be like looking at a person through a kind of prism and looking at them in all sorts of different ways and trying to help them make sense of their life. But, or it can be something you fill in, section one, section two, section three, section four, see section one, section five, already done this, see section two. You know, so it can either feel very repetitive or it can be something that is very informative. And it is about the time and the mindset you bring to it.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things that children's services use that are really helpful for cutting to the heart of someone's case history, or, you know, the massive file that they might have, which are the genogram and the chronology.
Yeah.
And I would say those two alongside a one-page profile would hopefully give you a really good introduction to someone. And also, if you were then passing a case on to someone else, that you would have a really good starting point. Case summaries done periodically, really useful as well. I think it's having the confidence, isn't it, that you've got the essential stuff there and you're not worried and trying to look through absolutely everything in case you've missed something vital. And again, consistency in where people put things. One of the things I do on recording workshops is ask people from the same organisation to say what they would look at if they were allocated a case. And hopefully they'll all say they'll look in the same places. And if they don't, then they need to agree where to put things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And certainly I also talk about the tyranny of the case note. Yeah. If somebody's putting everything into case notes, which are a private document, they're never published to families, right. You know. They're just kept on the machine. And, yes, they're internal and we can look through them. But some people have, you know, like thousands of case notes on, and trying to work out what's significant to the child from those case notes is very hard. A good chronology of significant events for the child, significant meaning both positive and negative, can be so helpful, as you say, to really putting you into the child's life and the child's situation in a way that case notes often can't.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I find helpful when I'm writing reports, but also that I used to do when I was writing more assessments, is not write, but speak. So talk to someone else about the case and they make notes. Or now I can just record it on a voice memo on my phone and then listen back to it, because I find that my thoughts become much clearer and much more coherent and form much more of a sensible story through speaking it rather than trying to write it. And it also then means that you can decide where to put things rather than just repeating the same thing over and over. So that I find that particularly helpful myself, just to speak about it for a few minutes and then I've got the bare bones of what I want to actually convey.
Yes, and I guess what I do is put it all out on flip chart paper. So it's a similar thing. Put the child in the middle and then put all the different things that I'm thinking about all around them,
like,
and then
mind
once
map.
Again, like a mind map, yeah. And then I use that to write to. But it's that same idea, isn't it, of not compartmentalizing the person in a pro forma, but actually taking them outside of that and enriching your own understanding before you go to fill in that pro forma.
Doing the thinking without the boxes. The other thing that might be useful to think about is how we help each other with recording. So I was talking to some new managers recently, and they'd been working in teams and they'd just been promoted and they were going to be working in other teams. And they were saying, oh, you know, there's going to be lots and lots and lots of work, lots to look at and things like that. And we had a conversation about quality of the work that they got from that team that they were going into, because they said, well, you know, I could see things that I could improve here. And I asked them if they thought that there would be similar kind of thinking from that team about the team that they had previously been in, so where they'd been a practitioner. And they said, well, maybe some of the stuff we send on could be better. So we had a conversation about doing an analysis of what comes in and what goes out, because those are key points. You know, if you can get stuff in that's of a good quality and has the things that you need in the right place, then you're off to a fighting chance, really. And similarly, if you pass on stuff, it should leave you in reasonably good shape. So that was a very rambly way of saying a good place to focus on is the relationships with the people who bring work in to your team and the relationships with people that you pass work on to, so that you can get good quality work in and good quality work out, And if everyone's doing that, then everyone benefits.
I think that's a really good point, Jerry. And it also just sparked in me a memory I had of a worker who was struggling to do good plans. Mm-hmm. And she clearly wanted to do excellent work, but because she was struggling with planning, she would always leave them till the last minute. And then they would come to me to authorize, and they were on the, you know, it was 5 to 5 and it had to be done by 5 o'clock. And she'd run in and she would say, I know there are things that are wrong, and I know there's this and there's this, and you're not going to be exactly happy, but please just authorize. And in the case of this person, I actually made the decision to stop authorizing, which was really, really hard for her. But what I would say is that she really just came bang up to the mark, you know. She, and what she learned, and what we both learned, was to get things in earlier, so that I had more time to have a look at them and had more input, so that she could make those deadlines. So there was a work management issue as well as a recording issue. And I think that, you know, as a manager, how many times are you going to approve something? And when do you say you can't? And what's the knock-on effects of that? I think that's a really big dilemma that managers face.
Yeah, and being prepared to say that this isn't what you'd expect, either from someone in your own team or from another team, it causes a problem to start with, but I think it can then lead to real benefits if you agree expectations. And it may be that your expectations are unrealistic and you need to negotiate, but it's important to not constantly be covering, I think. And I would love to see managers occasionally turning work away because there's too much written. And that's a real problem that we have, I think, that we think that quantity equals quality, and we're conditioned into that, and to an extent, I think, by this idea that if something wasn't written down, it didn't happen. Which I once heard Eileen Monroe talk about, and she said it was absolute nonsense. Because you don't wander around writing everything that happens in the whole world, and things do happen. So, you need to write down the important points. But overwriting is detrimental to people. Actually, that's an ethical decision as well. And also, it's taking your time from possibly more important work. And the other thing that she said, which I thought was quite helpful, was that if you're challenged on a decision, of course you show the record, but you also should have the opportunity to explain yourself. And if you thought about something and you talk to other people about it, that forms part of your evidence about how the decision was reached. And the record should indicate the important features of that. But you will have the opportunity, you know, if heaven forfend you end up in court, to say something about what you did as well as just to show the piece of paper. And I find that quite reassuring, actually, that the record is, it's really significant, but it's not everything.
That sounds like a good place for us to end our chat, Jerry.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. It has. The main thing I want to go away and think about is the empowerment aspect of it, actually, and the question of why am I writing this down, and that applies to other work that I do. Now that I'm not doing direct practice, I still write far too much in my life. So,
that was very interesting.